Next up, The Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth. We're going to talk about clairvoyancy and the power of all these abilities next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're going to be talking about clairvoyancy, the ability to use incredible powers within you. Ellen Tad with us. Her book is called The Infinite View. Internationally known clairvoyant counselor, she's been teaching and counseling for more than 40 years, widely respected for the integrity of her work, the accuracy of her perceptions as well. She's been supported by our friends at the Edgar Cayce Foundation, the Marion Institute, our friend again, Deepak Chopra. And here is Ellen Tad on Coast to Coast. Well, you know everybody we know, Ellen.
Hi, George. Well, yes, I guess it's a circle of people interested in the same topic.
Yeah, and they're all good people, aren't they? They care about what they're doing, and we need more of them on this planet right about now.
I agree.
Hey, tell us a little bit more about you.
Well, I wrote this book, The Infinite View, and this book has been a journey in the making. What brought me into my work originally is that when I was 19, my mother came back and talked to me after she died, and it was the watershed event for me. I was raised by my father, who was a physicist, and I grew up in a scientifically oriented household, but my mother had a severe case of MS, and I was a sensitive child. I did see things in the dark, and I slept with my light on. I think many children have experiences and don't quite know how to interpret them. But I really wanted to understand, you know, why is it that my mother is sick? And what is the meaning of life? And why is one person rich and one person poor and one person sick and another well? And so I was struggling to get along in my life. And so when my mother came back to me to years after she died, it was so significant. I write about the experience. It was actually through a trance medium who was my brother's girlfriend at the time. And she explained that she had chosen a life of difficulty to learn compassion for those who suffer. And she said, no matter how things appear, if you look deeply, you'll see there are reasons and there really is justice. And it was like a veil was lifted, and I started to see life and people very differently after that. I started to see that everyone was spirit temporarily on the earth, and we all come here to learn and to contribute. And that was the beginning. That was a long time ago now. That was the beginning of letting myself open to this natural clairvoyance. And then I started having experiences with a variety of beings in the spiritual world. You know, I was raised in an academic environment. Mm-hmm. So I asked myself, when I realized I had this sensitivity, how do I want to use it? Just like an artist has to ask, you know, do they want to paint in oil or watercolors? And I was most interested in the deeper questions. You know, I wanted to really understand a philosophy of life. And what I teach in my classes and what I hope my book facilitates is the interest for people to have their own direct experiences.
Did you hone your skills over time, or did you always have them?
Both. I always had a sensitivity. I think I was, you know, it's the kind of child, if I walked into a room and someone had a stomach ache, I'd get a stomach ache. I was a psychic sponge, but I didn't know how to use them well in the world. When my guides and teachers got a hold of me from the spiritual world, they said, you are a sensitive in an insensitive world, and we're going to teach you how to navigate the world with your sensitivity and use it as a skill rather than a problem.
Well, now let's talk about the clairvoyancy in general. You're a clairvoyant counselor. So what does that mean?
Well, you know, it's clairvoyant actually means clear vision. I have visions, and there are two different kinds. There's inner vision, where you see pictures in your mind's eye. So if I tell you, you know, remember what your bedroom looks like, you can see the image of it in your mind's eye, even though your eyes are opened and you're looking at the room you're in. So we all have inner vision. And sometimes the inner vision comes from our creative mind, but sometimes images come to us without conjuring them. So inner vision is having these pictures in the mind's eye that are given or that are received that give insight and information. Outer vision is when literally the external environment disappears and another image or picture is superimposed over it, which is much more dramatic. When I first started having experiences, I had a lot of outer vision because I had been a skeptic, and this helped me to become much more confident that what was happening for me was real. But now I rely much more on inner vision because it's much more practical. You know, you can do things in your daily life and have inner vision. But when I work with someone for the first time, I see pictures of previous lives they've lived, and I go through a number of them looking for patterns to understand who they are and why they've incarnated, because I do believe in reincarnation, and it really helps us to understand why we have certain attractions and why certain things are difficult for us, because we have a history in our soul.
Do you believe that most people have this ability of clairvoyancy and telepathy and everything else that comes with this?
I do. I certainly see it in children, and it gets conditioned out of children. I like the phrase, what we focus on is what we see. And when we're children, we're taught to focus on this is a glass or this is a table. We're not taught to look at the energy around things. And because of that, little children who I believe have a natural clairvoyance, it fades. I saw it with my daughter. You know, she had a natural clairvoyance as a little girl, and when she went to school, she didn't want to be different, and she shut it down. So it's really, to me, it's simply perception. It's an expansion of perception.
And you do not believe that this power resides in the brain. It's outside of it, isn't it?
Well, I write in my book about having had out-of-body experiences. I had them as a child where I would be tired. I'd lie on a bed, and then the room would start to spin, and my consciousness would be on the ceiling, and then I'd look down and see my body asleep on the bed. And so I learned very early that my consciousness existed outside the body.
That happened to me at 11 years old, Ellen. I've never been able to duplicate it, but it was my out-of-body experience, and that set me on this path.
Yes, it
was an amazing feeling.
It's an amazing feeling, and then you know for sure that you exist outside your body, and there's no doubt. And this is what I think is most important, is for people to have their own experiences, because it's not... You know, it's not something you can really intellectually debate. It's really a matter of direct experience. And yes, and now you know. Meditation, deep meditation, is one of the tools that can help you to create an out-of-body experience at will. And, you know, and that's a practice. I also talk about how I teach meditation. But that's great that you have that memory.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And it never stopped in terms of leading me down the path. Again, I've never been able to duplicate it. It was a marvelous little feeling bouncing at the ceiling looking at my 11-year-old body. But maybe one day I'll do it again.
Yes.
Who knows?
Absolutely. I'm sure you will.
You had a clairvoyant episode with regards to watching your son be born. Tell me about that.
Yes, it's really one of my most moving experiences. Well, I was pregnant, and I started to go into labor, and I saw an external vision, not an internal vision, of three men with golden light all around them. A man on each side.
This is while you're in labor?
This is when I started my labor. I was still at home. And so there was a young man in etheric form. Now, I explained to people that the etheric body is like the physical body, except that it's moving faster. We all know that, you know, our arm is not solid, even though it looks solid. We know from biology, it's energy in motion. And the etheric body looks like the physical, except the energy in motion is moving faster. And so part of what clairvoyance is to be able to see this faster moving energy. And so here were these three etheric men, and I knew that the young man in the center was my son. And in thought, and the language in the spiritual world is telepathy, and in thought, he said to me, "I've just come to see if you are all right." And I remember thinking, "Oh, good, I'm going to have a considerate son and a short labor." And then on the way to the hospital,
you wish.
Because I did not have a short labor, my son in etheric form, my future son in etheric form, appeared again, but this time it was like he was standing up in the car, and I learned that someone in the etheric world can appear large or small, and then the etheric body dissolved, just like in Star Trek, it dissolved, and then a beam of white light entered the new child. So I actually saw his spirit enter into the new child, and then in 2 hours he was born. And I was so struck with the fact that we've all had this journey of leaving the etheric world, where we travel at the speed of thought and communicate with thought, and we come into these baby bodies. And so it was quite clear to me that he wasn't mine. He was an individual on his own life's path, and I was here to help him, but he was himself. And, you know, now he's an adult, and he's very much like this person that I met before he was my son. It was a wonderful experience.
Interesting.
I thought I was going to be a child psychologist before I had a spiritual awakening, and so understanding that a child exists before birth was a wonderful revelation for me.
There is some debate as to when the soul enters the human body, whether it's at conception or who knows. Based on what I'm hearing from you, it comes after birth. Does that make sense?
Well, he entered the body 2 hours before birth. My daughter entered sooner, but I don't see that the spirit enters at conception. I've never seen that. It's not always exactly at the same time, but not until the body is well formed does the spirit enter.
Whose decision is that, to basically send that spirit, that soul, into the body? Is it just a natural thing?
You mean when they choose to enter?
Yeah. Whose decision is that?
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, is there a spirit person who goes, "Okay, there you go. Go to that kid. It's your turn."
Oh, you mean in terms of how we end up with the parents and the family we have?
Yeah, and the timing of it.
Well, I think it's complicated. I certainly don't claim to know all the ins and outs of this. I really just teach from my own experiences. But what I've observed and experienced is it's very much like the analogy of going to school, that when, you know, when you have a first grader, the teacher usually plans the curriculum. And when you have a graduate student, the graduate student is deciding more about how they want their curriculum to be. And so it depends on the individual soul. Sometimes the soul is told, okay, there's your chute. There's the situation that will most benefit your growth. And in other instances, a soul has more input and more choice depending on who they are and the variety of circumstance.
Ellen Tad with us. Her book is called The Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth. What do you see as the difference between clairvoyance and gut instinct? Some people have a great gut instinct and they don't have any clairvoyance at all.
Yes. Well, the gut is the solar plexus chakra, and it deals with feeling, excuse me, feeling and emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you could call that intuition. But I have a whole chapter in my book on the relationship between the solar plexus chakra and the third eye chakra. I became interested in the chakra system. The chakra system, many of your listeners might be familiar with it. Chakra means wheel in Sanskrit, and there are seven fundamental energy centers from the top of the head to the base of the spine. And there, you know, if you Google chakras, there are, you know, hundreds of books written about chakras. But because I was taught to use my clairvoyance and my meditation to gather knowledge, I just watched chakras for a couple of decades, and then I wrote a little book about my conclusions. And what I found by watching energy centers, I wanted to understand how do they work in everyday life and what makes them healthy and what makes them unhealthy. And I learned a lot, and one of the things I learned is how we focus informs how we perceive. And I found that when people are focused in the gut, which is a concept that's quite popular, follow your gut, I was not pleased with what I saw. I saw that people tended to be more reactionary if they didn't get what they wanted. It's the center of emotion. And the third eye in the middle of the forehead is the center of perception. It's the center of wisdom. And I believe that perception should inform feeling. And so I have taught people how to live life quite literally focused out of the middle of the forehead. And I do an exercise where I have people compare perception while they're focused in the gut and while they're focused in the third eye, which is also the center of clairvoyance, and the difference is striking. People go from anxiety to calm, people go from confusion to clarity. And I believe that one of the real problems we have in our culture is we are a solar plexus dominant culture. And this is not a healthy way to be.
We seem to be at a time period now where people need to tap into something because I think they're at a boiling breaking point. Do you sense that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I often think of my classes as boot camp. And what I mean by that is that our world circumstance is worsening, and we all need tools to navigate it wisely. And this is what I'm most interested in, how to integrate spiritual awareness into practical everyday life so that we can make wise choices, so we can respond to people with compassion, and integrate spiritual principles in very practical things, what we eat, the jobs we choose, how we communicate. And we're so out of balance. We're so disconnected from fundamental spiritual principles and nature. And that's why we're in the mess we're in.
To be clairvoyant, what would your definition be of that?
Well, it's a visionary ability, and it's the ability to see things without using the analytical mind. The ability, you know, I just worked with someone yesterday, and I've never met them before. I look into their hand, I have visions, and I'm able to tell them about their deepest issues without knowing anything about them.
Let's talk more about that, Ellen, when we come back in a moment. Ellen Tad with us, The Infinite View, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Ellen Tad with us, the book, The Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth. Tell us about that subtitle, Ellen, and what you mean by that.
Well, the book has tools in it because really interested in helping people to have their own experiences.
Mm-hmm.
There are practices and examples of things to do. My guides became my teachers. After my spiritual awakening, I really had a 10-year period of training where these magnificent teachers in the etheric world would come to me, and it was always integrated into my everyday life. I would get a discourse on the meaning of compassion when I was rocking my son to sleep, and they trained me, and I learned some fundamentals. They talk about the concept of attunement. They say attunement is aligning our conscious mind with spirit. They say everyone has a spirit, a soul, and a personality. And the spirit is a spark of the God force that exists in everyone. And everyone's spirit's good. And everyone's spirit has an individual emphasis. One spirit may emphasize creativity, another nurturing or power. But whatever our individual spiritual nature is, it doesn't change. That's who we are. That's the only fixed aspect of our nature. And then the soul is the container of the spirit that allows the spirit to have individuality and animation. And the soul is very complicated and evolving. It contains all of our past life patterns, traumas, talents, skills, fears. And when we die, both our spirit and our soul leave together because we maintain individuality after death. And in the soul, there's a concept that I call first error, or the original attitude that was not in harmony with our spiritual nature. So what I've been taught is that we all started out with an enlightenment, an ability to actualize our spiritual nature with consistency, and then we lost it. We had an original fear, an original confusion that caused us to lose that enlightenment. I call it the beginning of the karmic snowball. And in Christianity, they call it the original sin. And what I've found is it's not the same for everyone. We don't have the same confusion or the same fear, or the, sometimes I think of it as the lowest common denominator lesson. It's the root issue. And when we incarnate, we're guided towards parents and circumstance that set us up to work on our learning. We all get set up to grow. And then over the soul is our personality, our persona in the world, which is influenced by genetics, conditioning from parents, society, and education. And that's where psychology stops. And then I add past life influences and influence from the spiritual essence. And what I found is that fulfillment is when our spiritual essence manifests at our personality level. When our true identity is expressed and felt and manifested, that's when we feel fulfilled. And culturally, we're taught that fulfillment comes from getting what we want. And I think that's unfortunate because I don't know anyone who gets everything they want. And that definition leads people to feel a lot of dissatisfaction rather than the empowerment of how are we manifesting ourselves.
Is there a difference between clairvoyance and psychic abilities, or is it all one and the same?
Well, I tend not to use the word psychic only because it tends to focus more on prediction, I think,
right,
in people's mind. But psychic ability can come from an array of sensitivities. It can come from clairaudience. It can come from clairvoyance. It can come from in a very developed intuition. It's the ability to know things without the analytical mind. And all of our physical senses, you could think of as having an octave lower component. So there's the seeing with the eye, then there's the deeper seeing, and then the hearing with the ears, and then there's the deeper listening. So people who have psychic abilities can be relying on any of those deeper senses.
To tap into this, to be able to be extremely clairvoyant, what do you need to do?
Well, meditation is key. Meditation is the ability to learn how it will to still our brain chatter and listen. And what happens when we become good meditators is we can perceive beyond our preconceived notions. And if we don't get beyond our preconceived notions, then it's very hard to be open to that which is beyond our conditioning, whether it's from education or society or our upbringing. So when I teach people, the foundation exercise is meditation, and I have a meditation technique in my book. And, you know, meditation is now a more commonly talked about thing, but it means different things to different people. For some people, it's a relaxation exercise. For me, it's really a skill that allows you to listen. So that's one fundamental skill. The other is learning to activate the third eye. The third eye in the middle of the forehead is the center of clairvoyance, but it's also the center of just good decision making. In sports, it's the zone. It's the place where athletes get when they are no longer attached to winning and they perform their absolute best. And this is third eye focus. And it's a skill that can be developed. It's simply activated through focus and concentration alone. I often tell people to stare at points throughout the day. The thing about clairvoyance is it's activated through staring.
Staring,
you know, when I stare into a hand, I'm activating clairvoyance, and there's a term for it, which is hand scrying. But any, you know, staring into a fire, staring, I once taught a workshop called You Can Read Anything. And it's just this developing this ability to focus deeply and to listen deeply. So focus and concentration is key. It's one of the reasons kids have clairvoyant experiences is they stare. And then as we age, we're told staring is rude and not to do it. But it's this act of deep focus that activates clairvoyance.
You talk about your chakra system as well. How does that tie into this?
Well, the chakra system is a wonderful system. I call it a framework for understanding ourselves and others. It's an energetic system that exists in the etheric body that functions in all of us, whether we're aware of it or not. And for example, the crown chakra at the top of the head is the golden halo in religious pictures. And when we're happy, it's opened. And when we're depressed, it's closed. Depression, I define as a closed crown chakra. And I've been able to help a lot of people through depression by helping them understand how to open the crown chakra. So it's a very practical chakra system. It's, you know, my little book that I wrote about it is called The Wisdom of the Chakras. And it's very practical. So you can't be inspired and depressed at the same time. So inspiration opens the crown chakra. One of my favorite quotes is by Emily Dickinson. She said she knows a poem by two things. One, when she feels chills all over her body and she can't get warm sitting next to a fire. And two, when she feels the top of her head come off. And I love that. She was able to feel that when she was inspired, it feels like the top of your head comes off. And this is the crown chakra. This is the chakra which is the bridge from the material to the spiritual dimension. So I suggest to people that they weave inspiration into their, excuse me, their daily life as a way to keep the crown opened and to antidote depression. But if in our culture we attach inspiration to getting what we want, then many people get discouraged and depression is what follows. So there's so much information about the chakra system that's so practical. So I just find it as a wonderful tool for people to use to monitor their well-being. You know, my reason for starting to clairvoyantly watch chakras was I wanted to understand people's behavior. And I was particularly confused by what I call PhD kindergartners, people who are in very developed in one aspect of their life and then very immature in other aspects of their life. And so when I looked at the chakra system, I could see very quickly strengths and weaknesses and understand patterns in people's behavior. You know, if someone has a weak base chakra, which is the center of discipline, then you don't want to hire them to do organizational work for you. If someone's crown chakra is closed and they're a minister, then they're probably not very clear because they're not having direct spiritual experience. So as I teach people to sensitize themselves to the chakra system, it becomes a wonderful way to read people and to understand that everyone has strengths and weaknesses. Everyone's good. And yet, because of faulty habits, behaviors can be really unpleasant.
How do you know that these clairvoyant moments aren't just gut instincts or hunches that come to you?
Because it's very visionary. How do you know that your out-of-body experience wasn't your imagination? It was so experiential. You couldn't have made it up. And so my experience is, you know, I love the fact that I was raised by a scientist. And because of that, I've had what I think of as a healthy skeptical mind. I have an imaginary shelf. And when I have a vision or an experience and life hasn't confirmed it yet, I put it on the shelf because I don't think it's easy to know what is true. And so it's through the process of repetition that you become confident. That's the scientific method, that if you can reproduce an experiment over and over again, then you have confidence in it. And so, you know, this has been over 40 years for me. I have had innumerable experiences, and because of that, I have confidence.
How do you use these abilities, Ellen, to make your own life a little simpler? How do you use it?
Well, I tell a story in my book about my son and deciding which college he should go to. Mm-hmm. And we were driving around looking at colleges, and I was tired. I was tired. I didn't want to do it anymore.
You mean you're human?
I am surely a human. And so I said to my guide, tell me, you know, where's my son going to go to college, will you? I'm tired. And I heard a direct voice. This is a clairaudience because, you know, just like when I was talking about psychics, I have a sensitivity on a lot of levels. And the voice said that my son would go to the very same college that my next client attended.
Your next client? Okay.
My next client.
Who hadn't come in yet.
My client, yeah. Hadn't come, yes. So when my client walked in the door, I said to her, so Mary, where'd you go to college? And she thought that was a strange thing.
Strange question right away, that's right.
And she told me. And I said, well, my guide told me that my son will go to the same college that you went to. And her friend was with her and said, oh, Mary knows the dean of admission. She'll write a letter for you.
Wow.
And she called the dean to talk about my son. And at the very minute that she called the dean, my son's application was in front of the dean.
Just happened to be there.
Just happened to be there.
Synchronicity at its best.
And then, of course, that's where my son went to school, because the dean was like, my gosh, I have this pile of applications, and the person you're talking about is right in front of me.
Do you think clairvoyancy has the ability to manipulate? I mean, do you think it made him move the application to the front without him knowing it?
Well, I think it brings up a deeper question. And in my book, there's a chapter on the relationship between destiny and choice. I think it was my son's destiny to go there. And so there was a kind of what I would call cosmic orchestration. And in that cosmic orchestration, you know, he had a freshman roommate that a computer picked, who's now a lifelong friend of his, and the relationship continues to impact his life and is clearly significant. So we all have destiny and choice, and in the spiritual circles, there's talk about the fact that you can create your own reality, and then there's other talk in other circles that everything is destined. What my guides express is there's a combination of both. Some things are destined and other things are not. And I have seen that some people's lives are more destined than other people's lives. And it's not that one is better than the other. It's simply that different lessons are involved. I think of a destined life as a short leash life. There's not a lot of choice. If you go off your path, you know, you get kind of jerked back. You know, I got off my path and I had a car accident that jerked me back until I got back on my path. Other people have a lot of creative choice and they are much more in control of creating their reality. But I think the problem with the common message that we can create our own reality is people end up feeling that they've failed or they haven't done a good job if they can't. And I just see it as more complex. It's, we have plans before we were born that we come in with a kind of blueprint. And it's kind of remarkable. There is a cosmic orchestration that is beyond intellectual comprehension. And when I have trouble grasping it, then I just take a moment and remember the miracle of our bodies and all that's going on when we're not even thinking about it.
Ellen, when we come back, let's take some phone calls, questions for you, and also perhaps stories of clairvoyancy that have affected people. We'll be back.